So mitzvah ayin zayin, the 78th mitzvah, which is mitzvahs hatoya acharei rabim, which is the mitzvah to lean oneself towards the majority. Lintos acharei rabim, to lean towards the majority. Vu kishiyipol machlokes bein hachamim bedin midini haTorah kula. Well, there's disagreement between the sages regarding any one of the mitzvos of the Torah. Uchmochein bedin prati, meaning also if there's a specific court case. So not only if it's a halacha, universal halacha, but a specific din, a specific court case between two people, one goes according to the majority. Kolomar bedin shei ben Ruvin l'Shimon al derech mashal. So let's say we always use in the Torah when we want to describe court cases or just fictional people as examples, we call them Reuven and Shimon. If we want to add more people, Levi, etc. Kishetia machlokes bein dayanei iram kishiktasam danim lechi vuktasam liftor. That when they go to the judges in their city, and one of the judges says that their one person is exempt, the others say that he's liable. Then you go according to the majority. Lintos achar harov lolam. We always go according to the majority. Shnemar achar rabim lahatos ubeir amru zichronam l'racha ruba deraisa. And the sages say explicitly that the principle of going according to the majority is deraisa, is a law on a biblical level. It's really talking over there in Chulin, it says, about when you go according to the majority of things, like rov behemos ksheris, that most animals are kosher, so it's also, in general, you go according to the majority in everything, not just things. There's a principle called ruba de isa kaman, ruba de lesa kaman. So there's a rov that you can count. When you go according to the judges, you count, there are three judges, two say he's liable, one says he's exempt, so you say you would come out that he's liable. But if there's also something called the ruba de lesa kaman, that a rov that's not countable in front of you, which is the principle of, for example, that most animals are kosher, so you don't necessarily have to check every defect in every animal because you can rely on the principle that most are kosher. Just something you know, that it's a known principle that most are kosher, not that you've taken all the animals in the world and counted them and found that 65% are kosher, for example. Uvechiras rov ze lefi hadome hu b'sheshnei hakitos hacholkos yodos b'chochmas hatorah b'shave. So he's going to tell you, you're going to ask, so why don't you go according to the majority at all times? You know, it's the famous story about the Christian who was talking to Rabbi Yonas and Ibishitz, and the Christian said to him, well, Rabbi, you know you have a principle in your Torah called rov, the majority. You follow the majority. So most of the people in the world are Christians. So why don't you become Christian? So Rabbi Yonas and Ibishitz said, no, that's only when you have a suffix. So the going according to the majority is only when you have a group of people who are equally versed in the Torah. So, for example, you don't say, again, we have this idea of, okay, it's only when you have a suffix, but you don't say, well, you have all the Reform rabbis who say one thing, and all the Orthodox rabbis say the other thing. That's ridiculous, because even amongst the Orthodox rabbis, you have you may be most of the Orthodox rabbis in the world who issue a certain opinion, but that's not necessarily true, because they are not necessarily entitled to an opinion when compared to other rabbis. I mean, certain things are pretty objective. I mean, everybody, I think even the most learned Reform rabbi would agree, even if you asked him, that he wouldn't hold a candle to Rav Yoshev in terms of, you know, objective Torah knowledge. He might say, still, you know, I still disagree, which is, you know, he's entitled to do so. I mean, not really entitled, but according to Shein Lomar Shekas Chachamim Wetes Lo Tachria Kas Burim Meruba Afilu Kiyotzi Mitzrayim. So you obviously can't say that a small group of sages will not overrule a gigantic group of ignoramuses. That makes no sense. The whole Torah would be gone if that were the truth. Aval b'hashvaya sachochma o b'kiruv hodiasnu atorah shiribu yadeos yaskimul olam el ha'emes yoser min amiyot. So it goes according to the majority only when you have a group of people who are at approximately, again, it's impossible to determine exactly, when you have a group of people who are approximately at the same level of learning and can make an educated decision and talk to each other. And so in that point, then it's sort of, the Sefer Chinuch is saying that it's sort of a statistical thing. It's not just a gzeiras hakosav. It's not simply a ruling of the Torah without a reason. That statistically speaking, when you have people of the same level of learning, then most of them, the majority of them, will probably be right most of the time. So therefore, the Torah tells you, as a wise just way of approaching the world, that you should go according to the majority. So either whether they you think that they are right or not, so you do not violate what the majority says. What I'm saying that when you go according to the majority, that's only when the two opposing sides are approximately equal regarding the true knowledge. Because the Torah tells you that you go that this is in every place besides the Sanhedrin, that you have to go, you have to decide who's of approximate level of wisdom. So when you're talking about the Sanhedrin, when the Sanhedrin takes a vote about what the halacha should be, then you don't have to analyze, well, that this part, the Sanhedrin voting, the people voting one way, are they more knowledgeable than the others? No, the Sanhedrin is a unified body. So what's the reason? The Torah tells you explicitly there have to be 71 people. That since the number of people in the Sanhedrin is set by the Torah at 71, so therefore, since it gives you the exact number of people about whom you have to go according to the majority, so this is an exception to the rule that you, before deciding to go according to the majority, you have to figure out if everyone's approximately on the same level of wisdom or not. And furthermore, says the Sefer Chinuch, it's impossible to determine in the Sanhedrin. There are very tiny differences between who knows a little bit more, who knows a little bit less, but really they're all huge rabbis. So you can't start saying, you're trying to decide who is a tiny bit more wise than the other one. They're all basically, to be on the Sanhedrin by definition, you have to be in a very high level of wisdom, since you have to make sure that everybody in the Sanhedrin is very wise. So therefore, then you go according to the majority in any case, because they're all at approximately the same level of wisdom. What's the reasoning for this mitzvah? That we have to strengthen the foundation of our religion with this principle. She'ilu nitzavinu ki kaimu haTorah kasher tuchlu l'hasik kavanas amitasa. If everybody was commanded, you keep the Torah according to your opinion, your personal opinion, what you think makes the most sense. Kol echad ve'echad mi Yisrael yomar daiti nosenes shamitas einin ploni keinu. Everybody's going to say, I want to paskin this way, this makes more sense to me. Then the whole Torah will be gone. Ve'afilu kol olam yomer behefcho lo yihelo rishus la'sosinia behefcho emes lefidaito. So really, if the Torah said that everybody should follow their own opinion, so then not only would it be just a force for destruction in that way, but if you decided that the halacha had to be one way, then you couldn't listen to anyone else. Even if a bigger rabbi than you, for example, said that you're wrong, though the halacha is differently, said, no, well, the Torah commands me to do as I think, therefore, I have to do it. You couldn't eat in anyone else's house, there wouldn't be any unity, it wouldn't be good. That the Torah, instead of being one unified Torah, will be like many different Torahs. Everybody, according to the poverty of his intellect, literally, will decide what the halacha is for him or herself. We have enough problems with the Torah looking like more than one Torah in the Jewish people nowadays. But it's different. The poskim point out that many times it's different if it's known that there are two different batedinim, the two different courts in one city, or if it's known that there are two different groups of the Jewish people, Sephardim and Ashkenazim, with different customs, then it doesn't really look like two Torahs, because everybody knows that it's just two different customs. But here it would be even worse, because everybody would be having their own personal custom, and they could change their mind next day. Oh no, I changed my mind. I think this way makes more sense. That wouldn't make for a very good experience. No, but the way the Torah works is that we're supposed to accept the words of the majority of the sages. So yesh Torah achas lechulanu, there's approximately one Torah for all of us. This assures the survival of the Jewish people and the Jewish religion. We should never depart from the opinion of most of the sages. And when we do what the sages say, so we fulfill the mitzvah of God. Maybe at a certain point, the sages will not be correct. If you would, whatever this means, if you would ask God what he meant in the Torah, he would tell you something else, and the sages said differently, so it doesn't matter, because the way the Torah, it's like Lo Bashamayim Hi. So since God told us to observe the Torah according to the interpretation of most of the sages, so that by definition is correct, even if they happen to be wrong on an objective fashion. Aleihem yachatos velo aleinu. So basically, if you follow a rabbi and the rabbi is not correct, and you do it anyway, so then the rabbi is going to hell and not you. So it's a good deal. I was once, it was funny, because at the Breuer's Mikvah, when it's open for men on Erev Rosh Hashanah and Erev Yom Kippur, so there's a special room for rabbis. They reserve a special...
Really?
Yeah. Special mikvah and a special changing room for rabbis. So before, this was years ago, before I was even in the parsha at all, so somebody walked in and said, you know, I have smicha, can I use the rabbi's room, the rabbi's mikvah? So the attendant at the mikvah said, if you want to be judged tomorrow like a rav, then you could use the rabbi's mikvah.
Well done.
So he said, okay, I'll take the regular one. So that's an important principle. Yeah, if you happen to know that, if you're entitled to an opinion, if you're a Torah scholar, and you ask a rabbi a question, and something doesn't sound right, you really think he's not correct according to your real understanding, then you're not allowed to follow the rabbi. But if you're... You have to follow your own opinion. So you have to be extremely sure that you're correct, because a lot of times you don't have all the information. A lot of times the bigger rabbi is correct. But if you are entitled to an opinion, then you can't just say, oh, well, this other rabbi says like this, so I'm going to go according to that rabbi. But if we were really going according to the majority, and that wouldn't be the case, you would not be entitled to follow your own opinion. You would have to go according to the majority. But we don't have the system in place really nowadays. We don't have the Sanhedrin. We don't have a system in place where all the big rabbis get together and take a vote and decide the halacha in a certain way. So the system basically has broken down. So it really is sort of made like many different Torahs. Yeah.
Okay. Is there an idea actually of such a thing as an appeals court? In the in other words, can you have an opinion of, like, say, one based in and then have another based in, which is now, you know, which...
A bigger based.
Right, but it's more important or more fushive that will review it.
Well, before we get into that, but that would only be applicable for court cases, for a civil case. It wouldn't be applicable for rulings in matters of ritual law, like sort of
Heter. But I'm talking about a based in, actually.
So this was a major machlokes between the chief rabbinate of Israel or the chief rabbinate of Mandatory Palestine and the Eid HaRedis. Mm-hmm. That in order for the decisions of the Batei Dinim to be recognized by the British government, they insisted that there had to be an appeals process, because otherwise it wouldn't fit the bill of the law of standards of law that they expected, so they wouldn't recognize the decisions. So they decided that there was room, and there really is not a precedent for this, for say, besides the Sanhedrin HaGadol reviewing, you know, courts of other, they could overturn other courts, but there really is no precedent per se of one court overturning the rulings of another, unless there's an absolute mistake in the original court, you know, said, you know, we made a mistake, or they point out to the other court, you know, you made a mistake. So there is some room for that. It's not exactly clear how much. There's a principle called that one Beis Din does not review the proceedings of another Beis Din. So what does that mean? Does that mean that the Beis Din cannot review the proceedings of another Beis Din, or does that mean we do not assume that a Beis Din would do such a thing? So that's part of the discussion. So in any case, when they were establishing there was a chief rabbinate of the Ottoman Empire for a while. It's only Sephardi, but when they established the chief rabbinate of British Mandatory Palestine, then there was an Ashkenazi and a Sephardi chief rabbi. They reorganized the whole organized system of Batei Dinim. And one of the things they instituted was what's called the Beit Din HaGadol Ir Urim, the High Court, High Rabbinic Court for Appeals. So when they were first organizing this, apparently Rav Kook was the chief rabbi of Yafo back then. He wasn't the chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael, and because they hadn't formed the institution yet. So he sent an emergency telegram to the people who were discussing this, who were submitting the plan to the British authorities, and he says, there is no room for an appeals court in Jewish law. Well, guess what? He became the chief rabbi and he became the head of the appeals court. But this is a major problem. So that's a major problem. But basically, the assumption is that since the system is in place nowadays, that every lower court knows that its proceedings are subject to overturning by the Beit Din HaGadol Erorim, because that's part of the communal takonos. That's we decided that this is the system we want to have in the community, so the poskim are okay with that. Rabbi Yoshev, Rabbi Yosef, they were all served on the Beit Din HaGadol Erorim. Many great rabbis did, and they... Maybe it's not the best situation to put oneself in l'chatchila, but they felt that given the current circumstances, then it was okay to have a Beit Din HaGadol Erorim, and that was one of the things that the Eidah Haredes was very opposed to. The Eidah Haredes apparently had a fast day when the Beit Din HaGadol Erorim was established, because they said there's absolutely no room for this in halacha. We don't have appeals courts. Every Beis Din nowadays at least operates independently. But like I said, the whole system is broken down nowadays. Of going according to majority, except in court cases, of course. In the court cases, you go according to the majority of Dayanim, but in terms of matters of Isser V'Heter, ritual law, so pretty much every rabbi has jurisdiction over his own place, yeah.
When a Beis Din, comes up with a decision,
yeah,
they speak as one unit. They don't say, okay, you
won.
It's like Supreme Court cases where there's a split, whose opinion is
which. You're not supposed to reveal which Dayanim voted which way. That's correct. The Beis Din is supposed to speak. There are certain languages that they use when issuing the opinion that indicate whether there was a disagreement or was a unanimous decision, but you don't indicate which Dayanim voted which way. Bezeo inyan sh'amru zichronim livracha behorios, she'bez din sh'tou behora v'asa yechid al piyem, that a Beis Din that made a mistake in a ruling. Shehem b'chiyuv ha-korban v'lo ha-yachid klal, they're the ones who have to bring a korban and not the individual who followed their rulings. There are certain exceptions to the rule explained over there. And this is what I spoke about in the Drasha once, that with different halachic, there's so many... We don't have a system nowadays where there's a majority opinion that's mechayev everyone else. Again, if it's all the huge rabbis on one side, and your dinky little shul rabbi out somewhere but goes another way, so it's possible he's right. But if you're the one now, it's not a formal system of acher rabim lahatos per se, like it might have used to have been. But it certainly makes sense according to this principle that you would go according to the. All the big rabbis, and not your little communal rabbi in the middle of nowhere. Probably, unless he's the world's greatest expert on this topic, but it doesn't make too much sense to follow him as opposed to everyone else. But it also doesn't make sense when there is a disagreement, because we don't have a clear majority system in place nowadays. It also doesn't make sense when people are following different halachic opinions. It doesn't make sense to make such a stink about it, unless you really feel that it's causing a breakdown of the whole Torah that they're behaving in such a way, if they have really big rabbis on their side. So then, even if the rabbi happens to be wrong, then it's the problem of the rabbi, not the problem of the congregation. Yeah.
But bringing up, say, the rabbi, the stinky little shul, certainly it is his right and his responsibility, though, to establish standards that are appropriate to the circumstances of the community in a matter such as Kol Vistam
But that's exactly one of the issues I'm talking about. If somebody would protest against Kol Vistam, so the so-called Kol Vistam, then that doesn't make sense. That's what I'm saying, because you have. Even if Ramush is wrong about Chalav Stam is a colloquial term that we use to refer to milk that's supervised by the government.
Company milk.
Yeah, company milk. There's not, in Halacha, there's no such thing as Chalav Stam. Either it's Chalav Nach or it's Chalav Yisrael. So the Chalav Stam is a colloquial term used to differentiate between milk that's considered Chalav Yisrael based on Ramush's ruling that government supervision suffices, and Chalav Yisrael, which is actually supervised by a Jew and is kosher according to everyone. But that's a case where it wouldn't make sense to go protest and call someone else, eating treif and not give them an aliyah because they drink chalas. That's ridiculous, because there are many great rabbis who said that it's permissible. It could be that Ramosha is wrong. That's certainly a possibility. But there are many rabbis, Ramosha, Rav Soloveitchik, they were great rabbis on the other side, the Sa'ad Marav, the Chasim Sofer, all these, but it's insane. It doesn't make sense. If there would be a group of rabbis who would formally get together, and they would say, and most of them would say, you're not allowed to drink milk that's only supervised by the government, then even in the Midwest, he wouldn't have a right to that. But here, since there's no formal psak for everyone, then, of course, then you go according to what's appropriate for your community. The only thing is, if your dinky rabbi in the West is not such a dinky rabbi, and he knows all of Shas, and he knows Baal Peh and all the poskim, and...
He hasn't found out yet.
Yeah, so then he's entitled to... Again, I don't know, I wouldn't... practically how this would work, I'm not sure, but in theory, if he knows all of Shas and is entitled to opinion, and he has come to the conclusion that it's absolutely not acceptable to have government supervision of milk, and he insists that all his congregants fly in Chalav Yisrael and milk from New York, then he's, technically speaking, he's entitled to do that. That way, he'd probably get fired. The congregants, Dine HaMitzvah, the lechos of the mitzvah as follows, Kigon HaChilukim Sheyesh Berov Zeh Bein Dine Mamonos to Dine Nefashos. The difference between whether the court is trying a civil case or a criminal case, Shebedine Nefashos Tzorech She'arov Nikar Yoser Nikar. That in a criminal case, a capital case, then you have to have at least a majority of two in order to convict, which we discussed previously. As I said, the mitzvahs in our order is really out of order from the original Sefer Chinuch. So really, this mitzvah comes first, so we hadn't technically not supposed to have learned that yet. Have 23 people for a capital case. Again, that's a big jump from three, but still three would not be appropriate, certainly because you have a two against one case for a capital case is not doesn't work for various reasons. All these people who constitute a majority regarding capital cases have to have the real smicha. The smicha edus lehem sheim chachamim nevonim ushleim shiruyim lasos kol davar al yadam. That really, smicha nowadays is not so potent. Smicha nowadays just, basically, as Rabbi Schechter put it to me once, he said, smicha is not that you're entitled to your halachic opinions. It means that you probably won't mess up too much when people ask you shailas. So it doesn't mean you're entitled to original halachic opinions. Everybody knows or Shechter thinks about that. You have to be a really great scholar in order to be entitled to original halachic opinions. In any case, when you have real smicha, that does indicate that you're entitled to your own original halachic opinions and that you're a great sage of the Torah, and therefore you're entitled, certainly by default, by having this smicha to take part in a vote and go according to the majority. As far as I'm aware, we modern Orthodox people, even if we are criticized sometimes by people more to the right who claim that they have the greater Torah sages and therefore we should listen to them. I mean, we had our own.
Yeah.
And I mean, we had and have our own really great Torah scholars like Rav Soloveitchik. But other movements of Judaism, as far as I'm aware, have not produced really fantastic Torah scholars who are completely bucky and all of the Talmud and poskim and so the reason they have to be samuch is because we don't want to put people to death according to people who are not that wise because they might make a mistake. Well, misa ain't tashlumen. There's no way of paying back. Let's say you make a mistake in a civil case, so you can just go back, but and give the money back. But it's not the case in a capital case. Again, we already learned this, but the Sefer Chinuch hasn't learned this yet, that in capital cases, somebody who begins by offering a argument for acquittal cannot go back and offer an argument for conviction. That's not the case by civil cases. And we begin the arguments in a capital case towards acquittal. You also tell him that, you know, don't be afraid. If you didn't do this, so we're going to quit you. That's also part of this halacha, by the way, which I don't think I mentioned last time. V'inein istalek haposech mechach mikasa mechayeves, and person who opens is therefore not going to argue for conviction, unless, again, he can vote for conviction at the end. It's a little bit of a discussion amongst the commentators over here, exactly what Sefer Chinuch means by this. V'ashakol melamdim zchus bein rav bein talmid, that anybody could offer an argument for acquittal, whether he's a great scholar or even a student. And again, then you take the student and you put him on the Sanhedrin if he offers a really good argument for acquittal. V'yaser prateha mevar misof Sanhedrin. This is all found at the end of Masechet Sanhedrin. V'noeges b'chol makom v'chol zman v'schayim v'kevos. This is in all places and all times with males and females. Over alev alo nata. Males and females. They have to go according to the majority, not that they, that women get to be part of the majority vote over here. Because the Shiva is all, she can't have smicha, but if she's a huge scholar, maybe nowadays we would take her into consideration. I mean, we would, yeah. The over aleha velo nota achareyam, if you go according to your own understanding and you don't go according to the majority, you go according to your little dinky rabbi and everybody else is arguing with him. Bit el asei, you violated a positive commandment, don't you gadol me'od, you have a very great punishment, not that you get an earthly punishment, because it's not a concrete action. Shehu ha'amud she'atara nismeches bo, the whole Torah is really dependent on this principle that we go according to the majority. That's the whole, even, we wouldn't be able to operate in terms of passing the halacha from the Talmud, because the whole way the halacha was decided is that all the rabbis were arguing in the Sanhedrin, but when they still had real smicha, and they took a vote and they went according to the majority. So if that's the case, we have a lot of minority opinions recorded in the Mishnah, but the way we know which opinion to paskin like is because they took a vote. Mitzvah Ayin Tes, the 79th mitzvah is shelo lerachem ha'ani badin, not to have mercy on a poor person when you are judging him. Shelo yachmo hadayin al hachalash v'hadal b'shas adin el shiyadin dino lamito, that you should not have, the judge should not have mercy on someone who's weak and poor when he's judging, rather he should decide the court case as is really truly befitting. Lo outside achem lo alav, not taking real mercy into account. Aval yishra bein ha'asher v'adal ha'achricho lifroa mashu chayav, you should equate in your head between a rich person and a poor person, and you have to pay even the poor person to pay back to the rich person whatever he really owes him. Shnemar v'dalo sehdar berivo, you should not give preference to a poor person when he's during a conflict. V'nichbal ze'anyan b'makom achir, has a different pasuk that discusses this as well. Shnemar lo sisa p'nei dal, you should not lift up or give special credence to the face of a poor person. V'loshon sifra, Medrash tells us lo tomar ani huze, you shouldn't say, well, the judge shouldn't have this process going on in his head. He shouldn't say as follows. You know, this poor person is coming to me for a judgment. Vani v'ha'asher chayavim lefarneso, I'm well off, and the rich person is obviously well off, and we're obligated anyway to give tzedakah. Mm-hmm. We have to give tzedakah to the poor person. We have to make sure he has what he needs. Azakenu, I will declare the court case in favor of the poor person, and even though he might not really be liable, it doesn't matter, because we have to give him money anyway. V'nimtza misparnes b'nikiyu. So it's like giving him tzedakah in a nice way. The asher, the rich person who apparently owes money to, really has to give him money anyway. So make it nice. You know, don't let him go beg in the street. It's a very bechavadik. You come to the court and they say you win. Tamalomar lo sisav b'nedal. You shouldn't do that. No, you could say to the guy, you could whisper in his ear, you know, maybe you want to forgive the debt. Yeah. You could do that, certainly, but you can't. If he says, no, I want din, I'm coming to you to judge my case, I want the case judged according to the halacha, yeah, then you can't do that. Yeah. Although it could be, right, Peshar, but that doesn't always mean that you share the burden. Sometimes it means that you come to the conclusion that the only right way is that this person should pay the other person all the money. Psharaz is just means that you don't go according to the strict halacha, but rather, yeah. Well, I can't decide the case, and I'll give you half, and you half is not a pshara. That is called d'ani chatzatzta. It's called d'ani chatzatzta. That's not a pshara. Pshara, more that you just don't apply principles of strict halacha, but rather
you try to make everybody happy to
accept. Exactly. But that's most of our cases nowadays are really pshara, that the dayanim take all sorts of factors into consideration. They take making both sides happy into consideration, rather than going according to the strict halacha. Rabbi Willig told a story that one time he had two students, and there was one student in the class who was a bookbinder. Mm-hmm. So one student asked the other student to reinforce the binding of a certain sefer, and he gave back the sefer after it was bound. He said, okay, I'd like to be paid now. I charge $5 for the service. And back, this was 25 years ago. So the customer said, $5 for binding my book? $5? That's completely outrageous. So they went, they had it in Torah. They said Rabbi Schechter, Rabbi Willing, and Rabbi Neuberger, they had it in Torah over $5.
But that was back in
the bookbinder said, I don't want pshara, I want din. I want you to follow the strict halacha, which is very unusual nowadays. Also, if it's a huge case of tens of thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars, and you go according to strict halacha and the dayan makes a mistake, so that's really bad. At that, then you have all sorts of problems of what happens. Does the dayan have to pay? It's also good. But so we dayanim generally try to avoid going according to strict din nowadays because they might make a mistake. They said $5. So they decided, dayanim decided, okay, it's a simple case, $5. So we're willing to go according to strict din. So they decided in favor of the bookbinder. They said you have to pay him. Said they have to pay the full $5. Okay, v'shorash hamitzvah yadua. The reasoning for the mitzvah is known. Shaseichel meyid b'hashvaya sadin shedava roy v'chasheru. That they like Mrs. Birnbaum said that it's just understood that it makes sense that in the court system would break down if you had people doing things like this. Everybody has to be treated equally. V'noagiz v'chol makam v'cholzvan bizcharim. In all places and all times, in people who are going to judge, which is usually males, but as we pointed out, can be females. Sometimes, ve'over aleha v'hita hadin lechem losu al adal, if you violated this and you just gave special favor to the poor person, alvar al mitzvas melech, you violated the command of the king, but in vain b'malkos, shein b'maisa, because there's no lashes, because there's no action, because you're not doing anything. Okay, mitzvah pei, the 80th mitzvah, mitzvahs peiruk masa. It's the mitzvah of taking off a load. L'hasar ha-masa me'al ha-behema she'yaga b'masa ba-derech. So to take off a load off an animal that got weary under its burden while it's walking on the way. She'nemar v'kir sirech ha-mor sona'acha. When you see the donkey of your enemy. V'asone ze perusha Yisrael. What the sone here, the enemy, is a Jew. It's not talking about a goy. It says you should not hate your brother in your heart. Dehainu Yisrael, achicha, your brother, obviously means a Jew. Amru chachamim, the sages say, shenyan zehu kigon shira over avera biyachid v'hisra bo v'lo chazar shezeh mutter l'sanoso. So, not that it's advisable to hate goyim either, but technically they're not under the prohibition of losisna sechicha belvecha. So you might think that what the pasuk's talking over here, since you're not allowed to hate Jews, so it's talking about seeing an animal of a goy having trouble with its burden, and then you have to assist. But no, it's talking about Jews, and what it means, the Gemara tells us that the case is that this is a person that you saw committing a sin while he was alone. There were no two witnesses to bring him to proper punishment, but you saw him do it, and you warned him that he shouldn't be doing it, and he ignored you. In that case, you're allowed to hate the person. Mashamar chamor, lav dafka chamor, it's not specifically a donkey, ela kol behema, but rather it's any type of animal, ela shadibir hakosu behova. That the pasuk was talking about the normal type of animal that bears burdens, and that's a donkey, shachamorim lamasa. Uchsiv azov ta'azov imo, so what does it mean, azov ta'azov, kilomar azrehu, meaning help him out. Azov normally means to leave, to abandon. But for certain etymological reasons, in Hebrew sometimes you have homophonous roots. So, Miloshon ve'yazvu Yerushalayim shu loshon chozek. So, there's a pasuk in Nehemiah that says they strengthened the walls of Yerushalayim, and it says ve'yazvu Yerushalayim. The meaning strengthened. Fine. So, you should help out. Mishor she'ha mitzvah, the reasoning for the mitzvah is as follows. Lameid nafsheinu b'midas hachemla, we should teach our souls to be merciful, she'imidas midam meshubachas. That's a great character trait, and not only to help out people who are having physical difficulties, even somebody who's being pained by the fact that his monetary things are going to be lost. In other words, his donkey is carrying this burden. His donkey can't take it anymore. He doesn't know what he's going to do with the donkey. He doesn't know what he's going to do with the load. Oive, oive. So you have to. So it's teaching you also that if a person is having difficulties, so you have to help out with that person as well. It goes without saying, but the mitzvah is this mitzvah is specifically talking about an animal. Dinei hamitzvah, the lachos are as follows: Goyim habehema shel goyu masoi shel Yisrael. So if the animal is a Jew's animal and the burden is the goy's burden, then what's the halacha? There, I'm going to read it to you from the Rambam. Bemas hagoy uvamasa shel Yisrael imaya hagoy mechamer achar behemto eino zakukla. That if the animal is a goyish animal and the load is from a Jew, if the goy is the one leading the animal around, then you don't have to deal with this. Bimlav chayev lifrog vliton mishum tzar Yisrael. And if it's not, if it's the Jew leading the animal, then you have to help out because it's the Jew's tsar. It's the Jew is having difficulty right now. If the animal was a Jewish animal, and it's a non-Jewish burden, if the animal was a Jewish animal and the burden was a goyish burden, then you have to help out because it's really the Jew's pain that his animal is having issues right now. But if both the animal and... Yeah, that's what I meant. I was using shorthand speech for it. Obviously, Jewish owned. The animal's not really Jewish. Goyisha owned animal and a Goyisha owned burden, then this is not under the technical parameters of this mitzvah because it says, Chamor sonacho. Again, it's talking specifically about a Jew in this case. However, the Rambam does say you should still do it because of Mishum Eva. That we have a principle many times that even when technically you don't have to do something for a goy, you're supposed to do it because we want to foster good relations between Jews and goyim. Dr. David Berger tells a story. He was once reading a book, a historian, a doctor, one of the most important Jews of our time. He was reading a book about some Jewish sources written by someone who was obviously not that knowledgeable. So he quoted a Jewish source that talked about Mishum Eva, which means because of tension or conflict. That, in other words, because of tension or conflict, you're supposed to do it for the goy so as to relieve the tension and conflict. So Dr. Berger was reading the book, and the person quoted Mishum Eva and translated as, to distress the hated Gentile.
Woo-hoo!
So Dr. Berger was like, ha! He published this? Oh my gosh.
Where was his editor? Oh my god.
So that's completely the opposite of what the term Mishum Eva really means. Anyway, so not good. V'dina bogea b'oavo Yisrael v'sono shemitza v'sone lachuf hayetzer. So let's say you see two people struggling with their animals. One is your best friend, and one is someone you really don't like. Again, sone, the same is, chinech, as we explained, is not what we just discussed, but rather someone that you just don't really like, you have issues with. So you're supposed to go help your enemy, or the person you don't really like, lachuf hayetzer, because you want to force yourself, you want to root out the improper midos from within yourself, so you want to, you should go specifically and help the person you don't really like. Vafilo of lifrog v'sone liton. Even if your friend needs to take off the burden from the animal, which is really what's going on to help the animal, which really is the more important thing, because the animal is suffering right now, and the sone, only the person you really don't like, needs to put his stuff back on the animal after he already took it off, even though that's a less important part of the process per se. Still, you should go to the sone because you're trying to break your midos. That's not the technical sone. You just have a disagreement, you don't like each other. What does it mean when you see your friend's animal? When are you chayev in this mitzvah? That's if you are 1 in 7.5 part of a mil, which is 2,000 amos, and that's also called a ris. So I have that written down also. A lot of details in this mitzvah I have to write down. If that's the case, that's 266 2/3 amos, which is, assuming 45 centimeters for an amma, which is the stringent, the smaller measure, which here is a stringency, and that would be 120 meters, or approximately for a little less than 400 feet. So for those of you who are walking in the way and see your friend's donkey having difficulty with its burden. But if you're farther away than this, then you don't have to change your path to go to the person and help out with the animal. But if you do it anyway, you still get a bracha, tavala bracha. Minchas Chinuch points out that this is not muskam. Not everybody agrees with this. It seems that some people say there's really no idea whatsoever if you're farther away than this to go help out. V'din zaken o nichbad ve'inu lifichvodo shakol nidon lefi ma shehe ose b'shelo. Let's say you're really old and you don't really take stuff off animals and put stuff back on because it's too much for you at this point. Or it's, let's say you're a senator and you don't want to get your suit dirty and it's not appropriate for your kovod to take a burden and take it off an animal, put it back on an animal, pasnish, like you said.
Doing a good suit.
Right. Not per se, but really you're a very much highly regarded person, and it would tarnish your image in people's eyes if they saw you doing these types of things. So it goes according to what you would do with your own donkey. If you only have to help out if it would be a burden you could handle with your own donkey, or if, let's say, the important person, if he had trouble with his donkey, would he snap his fingers and say, servants, please come help with a donkey, or he wouldn't do it himself. In that case, he doesn't have to help out with someone else. Also, it's similar, also, by the way, to the halacha of Hashavas Aveda, that if you have to return a lost object and it's not according to your kavod to handle this object or to go to this place to get the object or return the object, then you don't have to do it. Or if this is happening in a cemetery and you're a kohen, also you wouldn't have to do it, for example. It's another example that the post can give. Again, prika, bechina, metina, beschar, that to take off the burden from the animal, you have to do that for free, but to put the burden back on the animal, you could request money for that from the person who's doing that. Or the person whose animal it is. V'she medada imo ad parsa, that after you finish putting the load back on the animal, you're supposed to walk with the animal and help it walk along until a parsa. Notel schar al halavaya, and you can take money for that too, the walking with it. I'll explain the second paragraph of metzia. V'noegas b'chol makom v'chol zman b'scharim unikevos, and it's in all places and all times, males and females. You'd neglect the positive commandment. Not only did you neglect to do it, you showed that you're not a nice person. You have a cruel streak. And if we don't show God that we're merciful, then God's not going to be merciful on us. He's going to punish us. That you are not worthy of receiving mercy.